discussion on the big topics in sports. This is Riddle and the Reporter with Junie Riddle and Nick Kieser on Nashville's best sports talk, 102.5 and 106.3, The Game and the Game Nashville app.
Welcome in to Riddle and the Reporter live from Barrel House at Bridgestone Arena. Junie Riddle, Nick Kieser here. It is a Predators game day as they host the New York Rangers here at Bridgestone Arena at 3:30 p.m. Our producer Connor is back at the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studios. Fellas, welcome into this weekend's show. How was everybody's week? How are we doing? How are we feeling?
Good. This is the first time that I've been live remotely anywhere since my sophomore year of college.
Oh, so, yeah?
Yeah. I'm glad that we are here this morning. Thanks to the Preds for having our studio here, obviously. But, yeah, I don't think you've been here doing a Saturday morning show since Michelle was around, right?
Yeah, no, the last time I did a show here at Barrel House, it was when Michelle was still here. So it's been a hot minute, but always love sitting up at this desk here at Bridgestone Arena. Great setup here at Barrel House. If you're coming to the game, make sure you get here a little bit early. Max Herz and company will be doing the pregame show here starting off at 2:30, kind of breaking down this big matchup against the New York Rangers. But, you know, as we do always, we're going to kick off today's show with some headlines. And I want to begin with last night's Pac-12 championship. The Pac-12 has been around since the 1950s in some kind of variation with all the West Coast teams. And after last night's championship game, the Pac-12 is no more. And what a great game between Washington and Oregon last night, Nick. I don't know how much of it you got to catch, but great game and great way to cap off a conference that will no longer be a thing.
Right, yeah. It's not going to exist anymore, but it should be, you know, something to always look back on. That was a historical game last night.
It was
going back and forth. And, I mean, look, like Michael Penix Jr. had a phenomenal game last night. Bo Nix played well, too, I thought. And it was just, you know, a good sight to see that they ended off on a good note. And needless to say, when you end off on a good note like that, it's hard to look back and go, man, Pac-12 dark at night, you know, we're not going to get to see that anymore whatsoever. It's not going to be what it used to be whatsoever. But, yeah, I didn't get to watch as much of it because I went to dinner last night. But that was a fun game to watch toward the end.
It was definitely a fun game. And what better way for a conference that is dismantling all its teams are going elsewhere to different conferences, then for it to be two Heisman hopefuls going up against one another in a really high-scoring duel between two teams that are playing for a spot in the college football playoffs. I mean, it's been a minute since the Pac-12 has gotten into the college football playoff, and now Washington has punched their ticket, likely either being the three seed or the two seed, just depending on what goes on with Georgia and Michigan today. But we'll be getting into some of the conference games later on in the show. So in other news, though, I got to bring this up because I don't know if you saw this all over Twitter last night. From the Thursday night football game against the Seahawks and Cowboys this week, it was a little bit chippy between Jake Ferguson and Jamal Adams, and, yep, and they kind of got into it early in the game, and then ultimately Jake Ferguson, the tight end for the Cowboys, catches the game-winning touchdown pass over Jamal Adams, and the Cowboys go on to win the game. And so afterwards, a New York Jets reporter who used to cover Jamal Adams quoted the video of the play and said, "Yikes."
Oh, boy.
And so then Jamal Adams goes and quotes his tweet, puts a picture up of him and his wife.
Oh, I did see this.
And said, hashtag
yikes. I did see that.
So,
if
there's ever a way to show that you're a terrible person, a POS, as I like to say, piece of you know what.
There you go.
That is a way to show it. listen. I've been getting some backstory about this, Nick, and apparently this guy has just kind of been a really hard critic of Jamal Adams in his play professionally. Mm-hmm. But when you cross over into someone's personal life and talking about you know, somebody that has nothing to do with your beef, especially someone's wife,
right?
That is the ultimate sign of disrespect for me.
It really is. I'll know more about that, you know, obviously this summer, but that regardless sucks. I mean, look, you can't just single someone out like that, especially just, man, just like going yikes. And like, even though like it wasn't like, you know, there was no cussing out, there was no like, you know, physical altercation or anything like that. It was something that when I first saw it, I was like, damn, like, like, wow.
And I don't even think his wife is bad looking. Like,
I mean,
she's not ugly at all.
I just think maybe he's used to having all the pleasure and all the money that he wants. Look, who cares? Like, don't compare apples to apples in this situation. There's different parts to everybody's life. And look, I think it's fair to say that civilians and athletes are in two different categories in a lot of different areas. Now, some people are likely the same, but look, that was really, really immature of him to do.
Yeah, one guy gets paid $16 million a year to play a sport. The other guy is probably making less than $100K a year.
Jeez.
And is probably working his tail off in this industry, because we all know how hard it is to work in the world of media. But I'm just telling you this, and I want the texter's opinion on this as
yes,
well. 615-737-1025. If somebody disrespects your wife like that, even if it is somebody like a Jamal Adams, I used to be a big fan of Jamal Adams. This kind of took away my fandom of him. I'm like, no, I can't be pulling for this guy anymore. He seems like a really bad person. But
I don't even know I don't even think I was a fan of him.
If that was me, I don't care if Jamal Adams is gonna whoop my tail. I'm doing something about it. When we see each other in person, gloves are being dropped on the spot. You don't disrespect somebody's wife.
No, absolutely not. No, there's no room for that. Why would you do that? So, look, I think at the very end of the day, that's just something else that we can't have. So, and also, I know that you have this up on here as well, that this I didn't see this until you brought it to my attention, but this Chiefs fan.
Hold on. You name the outlet. I don't want to name the outlet.
Oh.
And I don't want to name the writer that wrote it.
Because okay, we won't.
This is something else that's really getting on my nerves.
Oh, boy.
Because the outlet that you just name dropped, which I was hoping you wouldn't.
Well.
But anyway.
Bad rep so far.
Either way,
year.
If you look up this story, you're going to find it regardless.
Mm-hmm.
The writer and the outlet is known for doing this. I made a tweet about 2 weeks ago because this particular person wrote about Ryan Tannehill and how he thought Ryan Tannehill was showing some racial undertones.
Yes.
Because of the way he said he wasn't going to mentor Malik Willis. But then when he lost his job to Will Levis, that said he would be there for Will Levis. So
right.
He deemed that as racist, even though the context is completely taken out of hand. And so this past weekend, there was a young Chiefs fan. He was 9 years old, and he wore split-colored face. One side was black, one side was red, and he had like a Chiefs garment on his head, like with the feathers and stuff that go down.
I can see it, yeah.
And so apparently they put a photo of him from a side angle of only the black side of his face that was painted.
Right.
And they tried to call him a racist, a 9-year-old kid,
dude,
at a football game.
Yeah, there's no room for this whatsoever. This is awful. Look, and his mom, by the way, this is in a different news outlet as well. His mom, here's what she wrote on Facebook. Actually, this has nothing to do with the NFL. Also, CBS showed him multiple times, and this photo people chose to blast to create division. He is Native American. Just stop already.
That's the thing is, his grandfather is on a Native American council, lives on a Native American reservation out in California, and the boy himself is Native American.
Awful.
And we have writers out here coming at a 9-year-old kid to push their, you know, racial agenda to stir up controversy and get clicks. I am so sick and tired of the media. And again, it's not just about this, but How can you go to sleep at night going after a 9-year-old kid going to a football game?
I, I don't know what goes through your mind when you think something like that. Like, I think it's easy to pick up a headline sometimes, and you're trying to get something creative going, right? Like you're thinking, oh, how can I use like this image to get the most attention? And sometimes people do that. Like, that's just their reputation. But this is not a good example whatsoever, Junie. And quite frankly, it's disgusting. There's no place for it. And I'm not stealing words from Kyle Davidson, by the way, who was talking about Corey Perry earlier this week and all that. But it really is just disgusting. It's dumb. He's a young boy, young man. He should not be blasted like this. This is awful. Now, the cherry on top was obviously hearing about his grandfather, but still.
Oh, yeah, that was no like place. That was like a boom, I own you.
There's no like, place.
It's like, dude, like, number one, do your research
right
before you post something. And number two, like, I just feel like kids in general should be off limits.
Oh,
like, don't
man.
Don't talk about kids. If that's a grown man out there, fine. The grown man can handle himself and do that. But when you're talking about a child, that's crossing the line. But and what I have heard, though, is that apparently Kansas City Chiefs fans are going to go to the game and paint their face exactly the way he did in support for the young boy. Because all he was going to do there was to, one, match his garment, and number two, to cheer on his favorite football
team.
Now,
this is awful, but look, there's going to be a tribe of people doing this.
A tribe.
A tribe.
Now, look, that is
what it
is.
You better watch what you say, Nick, or they're going to come out and write an article about you.
No, but look, I think that is great. I love when there's something that is misunderstood, and then the fans will blast it. And then, like, sometimes the players will go along with it, too. So,
well, look. And that's the thing, though, is this particular writer, who, again, we're not going to name his name. He does not deserve
you
the recognition.
You can figure it out.
You can figure it out for yourself. You can go look it up. But either way, you know, the way he was there, I mean, he was posing with cheerleaders. He was doing the tomahawk chop with the players. Like, everybody was getting into it. Nobody had a problem with it. And it just goes to show you that there are so many sensitive people out there. And it's just like, get a life.
Yep.
Like, seriously, grow up and get a life and quit trying to just find something to complain.
No room for it.
About. Like, there's just so much more to do in life. But either way, I digress. That is our headlines for today. It is conference championship day in college football. A lot of big championship games. You also put on the grid today, Theo Vaughn.
Yep.
Special guest picker on
college
game day. I
thought that was cool. I thought that was really unique of them to go grab him.
Oh, he's hilarious.
He's hilarious.
He's going to be great. Might have to pop that on while we're doing our show just to get a little glimpse of it in the middle of the breaks. But either way, we got Colin Stevenson coming up next. We're going to bring him in. He covers the Rangers for Newsday up in New York. We're going to talk to him about the Rangers, who are currently the best-ranked team in the NHL, and the Preds have already beat them earlier this year, but it's going to be a huge game in Bridgestone Arena as Peter Laviolette and his team come into Bridgestone and looking for a pretty big matchup. So we're going to do that coming up next. You're listening to Riddle and the Reporter, Junie Riddle, Nick Kieser here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Welcome back in to Riddle and the Reporter this Saturday morning. It is a Preds game day puck drop against the New York Rangers. It's going to be at 3:30 this afternoon at Bridgestone Arena. Pre-game with Max Herz is going to kick off at 2:30. And to talk about this matchup, we are bringing in Colin Stevenson to the program from Newsday. He covers the New York Rangers up there in New York City. Good morning, Colin. Thank you for taking the time to join us today.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm here in Nashville, and I'm looking forward to a big game today.
Absolutely. These two teams already squared off once this year in Madison Square Garden, and the Preds actually played one of their better games of the season, so it seems as if the Rangers are going to come here and try and get a bit of revenge. But when I think about this New York Rangers team, the first player that comes to mind is Igor Shesterkin, and this is going to be a great goalie matchup with UC Saros today. When you look at Igor, where do you rank him amongst elite goaltenders in the league? Is he number one in your book, top three? Where do you have this guy when he's playing at his best?
Well, I mean, it's hard to say anybody's number one because, especially with a goalie, so much of what they do and are able to do is dependent on what the team does in front of them. So, you know, I have a hard time saying he's number one, but he's got to be on the very, very the shortest possible list. I mean, you put him there. Actually, like Ilya Sorokin on the Islanders, Vasilevsky was coming off an injury in Tampa Bay. You know, Jacob Markstrom, some of those guys. You know, that I would lump him in with those very, very top end guys. But he's a guy who can, you know, the way I would just dance around the question, I suppose, is that he's a guy who any year could win the Vezina. He's won a Vezina trophy once, and he could win it in any given year. So yeah, he's on the short list. I don't know if I'm quite, you know, comfortable saying he's the best, but he's in the conversation.
So last
although
year...
I have to be fair, I'm not sure he's going to play today. You know, indications at practice yesterday were that Jonathan Quick might be playing.
Okay.
And, you know, Quick is a guy who, you know, had a rough year last year. It looked as though, you know, he was sort of tailing off in his career, and people were somewhat skeptical when the Rangers signed him, but he's been great for them so far.
So last year, you know, the New York Rangers, I would say outside of the Boston Bruins, were a really popular team to pick to come out of the East. You know, they added veterans Vladimir Shesterkin and also Vladimir Tarasenko and then Patrick Kane as well. This year, they go out and they get Peter Laviolette to sit behind the bench, and they let some of those veterans go in free agency. What are some of the changes with this year's team, and how have they got off to such a great start this year so far?
Well, I think the key is Laviolette. I mean, he's been the biggest change. You know, you're right. They had a great sort of breakthrough season in 2022, and they'd gotten to the conference final, and everybody expected that they would do that again last year. It was a bit more of a slog for them, you know, no one quite was sure. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think that they lacked a little structure, and I think the players probably wanted a little bit more structure. They wanted a little bit more from behind the bench in terms of giving them tools to fall back on, as opposed to just go out there and create. And Laviolette has been the guy to give them that. You know, I mean, he's come in and he's played that, you know, he's very famous. Everybody talks about it. He plays this 1-3-1 neutral zone, left wing lock or whatever you want to call it. That's very noticeable. And that seems to have given the players some comfort. Like now they know that, you know, and you talk to players and they're like, if we're not having our best day, you know, at least we have this structure that we can fall back on. And that's made a difference. And I think there's a belief in what they're doing. And obviously they've had the results. I mean, you know, you talked about the last time that the Rangers played Nashville and Nashville won that game pretty handily. The Rangers at that point were 2-2 after that game. And then they just went off. They went on a 5-game road trip out west to, you know, Seattle and Western Canada, swept that trip, came back home, played Carolina Hurricanes, who were supposed to be the team that they're going to be battling with all season long in the Metropolitan Division, beat them. So they won 6 in a row, and you know, and you see where they are now. They're, you know, second in the league in terms of points, have the best record in the league in terms of points percentage. So, you know, it all started with that after that loss to Nashville. But Laviolette's been the biggest addition in terms of giving them that structure that they can buy into. And they, you know, they feel comfortable in it, and they believe it works for them, and that's the biggest thing. But that said, you know, it's not like they didn't bring in some other guys that have helped them too. I mean, Quick, as I mentioned, has been better than we thought he was going to be. He had a terrible preseason, and yet he's been great in the regular season. Erik Gustafsson, the defenseman, and both these guys, by the way, come in on bargain basement deals because the Rangers didn't have a lot of salary cap money space to play with. And so these guys came in on like $800,000 deals. And Gustafsson has come in and, you know, he's hanging out on the third defense pair, but you know, when Adam Fox goes down for an injury for 10 games, he steps up and he takes over as the point man on the power play and they don't miss a beat. So, you know, they have added players who've made a difference, but the biggest addition has been the coach.
Yeah, for sure. Colin Stevenson from Newsday is with us. Good to speak with you, Colin. And I think to kind of just go back a little bit to Jonathan Quick, he is 6-0-1 this season. He is, I think, one of the oldest goaltenders, if not the oldest goaltender at 37 this year. So we could see him here in Nashville today. But I want to talk about one other player that has been tearing it up in the NHL this season, and that's the bread man, Artemi Panarin. Walk me through what you've seen from him here just in the last few games, because he has a 31-point season so far. He's also working with Chris Kreider this year and Vincent Trocheck, which that trio is something to watch. So, Colin, what have you made of them?
He's working with Alexi Lafreniere and Vincent Trocheck. He's been great. He was one of the guys. He was probably the guy who was the most sad, if I could use that word. He was the most dejected guy at breakup day last year when they lost in the first round of the playoffs to the Devils. You know, the Devils are a rival. They're right across the river there. And they were an up and coming team. Like they hadn't been in the playoffs in a number of years. They were young. And I think the Rangers felt like, okay, yeah, we'll handle these guys, no problem. And they didn't, you know, and Panarin, as dejected as everybody was, Panarin was the most dejected. He had a couple of assists in the first game, in game one in New Jersey, which the Rangers won handily. And then he didn't score another point the rest of the series. It went seven games. He only had those 2 points in game one. And so he seemed really determined to come back stronger this year. And he, you know, I think he trained harder than he ever has before in the summer. And he's really started the season off on fire. And he's brought the team, and he's brought Lafreniere in particular with him. Lafreniere is a guy, if you remember, you know, number one pick overall in 2020. Yes. Was supposed to be the next superstar. Hasn't been that. You know, he had a problem with, you know, he came in as a left wing, and Panarin plays left wing ahead of him. Kreider plays left wing ahead of him. So he, for the most of his first 3 years, was a third line guy. And I think that, you know, they were determined to play him, in one of the top two lines this season. In order to do that, he had to switch from left wing to right wing, and they put him on Panarin's line. And those two have been fabulous together. But it's really been Panarin who's driven everything. He's having a season like I haven't seen him have since he first got to the Rangers in 2019-20. So, you're right to call him out as the guy to watch for anybody that's watching the Rangers. He's just so dynamic, and he can make things happen out of nothing. So he's having a fun season, and if he keeps it up, his name will be in the conversation for the major awards, I would think.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Alexis Lafreniere has been lighting it up, Junie, so that's a good mention for sure. I got to keep an eye on here this afternoon. One last question here for you, Colin. Colin Stevenson from Newsday is with us here on Riddle and the Reporter. So, look, I know that Cole Smith has a couple of goals this year. He had 2 goals against the Rangers last time, and the Predators' bottom six looked really good against the Rangers last time. But overall, how do you think this Rangers team and Peter Laviolette can approach the Nashville Predators this afternoon, coming off of a 6-1 loss to John Hines in the Minnesota Wild?
Yeah, so I think the Rangers are they've got things rolling on a train right now. And I think that they will be very highly motivated to play against Nashville. And now the thing that they have going for them is, you know, I mentioned that Adam Fox was injured and was out for 10 games. He just came back in the last game and played 21 minutes, which is probably maybe, you know, around his average or maybe a little bit under. He should be a little bit more up to speed in his second game. But I think the other thing is, you mentioned bottom six forwards. You know, the Rangers right now are getting huge production out of their fourth line, which, you know, is not a sexy thing to talk about ever. But, you know, you have a guy like Jimmy Vesey who was, you know, scratched on opening night. They had a bit of a rotation in the first few games between Jimmy Vesey and Tyler Pitlick. And Vesey was scratched opening night, and those two alternated the first 4 games before Vesey sort of got in and got an extended run. And VC's been on a bit of a tear. I think he's got like 4 goals in the last 7 or so games. And the fourth line in general has been playing great. And they have now become a line that, you know, Laviolette is not only using them in fourth line situations, defensive zone draws and stuff, but he's actually putting them out against other teams' top lines. And so if you're getting that kind of production from your fourth line, you know, I mean, you know, what else can you do, right? I mean, like, they're getting production from all areas in their lineup. So I think, you know, they'll be highly motivated. You know, in terms of, you know, your fourth line, their third and fourth line guys, you know, Nashville that did some damage against the Rangers in the first game, I think it'll be a little bit more challenge for those guys because the Rangers' fourth line is playing so much better.
That's Colin Stevenson from Newsday. He covers the New York Rangers up in New York City. Colin, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us and enjoy the game this afternoon.
Thanks very much for having me. This is going to be fun, I think.
Yeah, should be, Colin. Well, thank you, sir. Appreciate you for hopping on. All right. Well, it should be a fun game this afternoon, Junie.
No, it's going to be a really good matchup. Two of the best goaltenders in the NHL. If Igor Shesterkin plays, which Colin came on and said that it is looking like he may not, so that could be an advantage the Preds could take advantage of, even though to your point, it seems as if the Rangers' backup goaltender has put up some good stats this year.
No, he's been phenomenal. If you can recall, Jonathan Quick, longtime Los Angeles Kings goaltender, and he last played 2 games ago. So we will see what he does this afternoon against the Predators. He's had success against them prior, Junie, so we'll have a lot to get into just talking about the Preds matchup.
Absolutely. We will get into that breakdown a little bit later in the hour, but coming up next, we have got to address the Predators' 6-1 loss to the Minnesota Wild. John Hines' return to Bridgestone Arena. We're going to get into all of that and how the Preds can bounce back against the New York Rangers today. We're going to get into all that here in hour number one. You're listening to Riddle and the Reporter, Junie Riddle, Nick Kieser here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.
This is exactly what the NHL is trying to get out of the game. Yeah. The hits to the head. Roll the clip. This is embarrassing that this was not a 5-minute major. Kaprizov should be out. Carrier doesn't have the puck, and he finishes through on his head. This is highly illegal. This is what the NHL has been getting rid of for how many years now? This is old school, and I hate to see Carrier going off the ice. It's just such a dirty hit, and as a hockey player, you have an obligation to protect someone. If they don't have the puck, you can't hit them, and if they don't have the puck, you certainly can't hit them in the head. The refs should have made this call, and it's embarrassing, quite frankly.
That was Hal Gill on the Predators TV broadcast talking about Kirill Kaprizov's hit on Alexander Carrier, which was not when Carrier was possessing the puck, and it was blatantly head-to-head. It was a pretty nasty hit in that game that the Preds just concluded on Thursday against the Minnesota Wild. Carrier did not return, and it doesn't look like he will be playing tonight either, in a concussion protocol, I would assume.
And he's week to week. They came out yesterday after morning skate. Kevin Wilson from the Nashville Predators let us know at the press conference he is week to week and there's no more to speak on the matter. So there you go. But, yeah, it was an unfortunate hit. It was at the wrong place at the wrong time. And people that think that there was no intention to go hit Carrier, there absolutely was. There was – the puck was right there. He had just moved away from it. And Kaprizov comes in with the side of his body and basically sideswipes Alexander Carrier in an unfair spot. So I don't like to see that. I'm a little pissed off as well because of the way that he went in to play the puck on Carrier. There's no time and space for that whatsoever. There was no disciplinary action. There was no thought of it either. So Joe Smith from The Athletic, by the way, he even saw, he's like, I think that they could possibly, you know, have a hearing on this, and there was nothing at all on this. So
the NHL is going to do nothing. About the hit on Alexander.
And they would have been quicker on this too. So no, this did not get reviewed. And I think the more evident part to this as well that this should be said is even Ryan O'Reilly asked the referees, did you guys not have time to go back and look at this. And essentially, they didn't seem that it was a good fit to go back and go look at it or anything like that. So he doesn't know. And they weren't saying that the referees made the wrong choice.
Yeah.
And they weren't going to call them out like that. But they were saying, look, can you at least go back and look at it? Because, look, call the 5 minute. Then you can go back and watch the tape, make the assessment from there, and move on. But the rest of the game, all the Preds guys were chirping at Creel, and they were letting him know what he did. And, I mean, he's not necessarily a guy that really fights to fight, but he will drop the gloves. But the Preds were chirping him all the night long after that, but nothing happened, and they ended up going on a tear, which we're going to talk about. So, but, look, we have to start off there. There was a wrong place, wrong time hit. But they did get schooled by the Minnesota Wild and John Hines. The second game with the Wild. He was hired on Monday,
yeah.
Monday evening, and they won two in a row.
Yeah, no, you know, John Hines gets in there, and they completely start to play significantly better coming in here. First road game, because his first game with the Wild wasn't home against the St. Louis Blues,
yep.
But they come in here, and they just absolutely thrash Predators. I don't even think it was necessarily an overmatch of skill or talent, Nick. I just think that the Wild simply wanted it more in that
yep.
matchup. They forechecked excellently. They possessed the puck. They didn't turn it over in crucial areas. And plain and simple, they just wanted it more. They brought the intensity in this game, and whether or not John Hines used it as a motivational factor to come back here and get a win against a team that just fired him this summer, I think the players knew the underlying message and wanted to go out there and perform and get a win for their new coach.
Absolutely. And the more troubling aspect of this game was the will to win. And that's the more frustrating part, maybe if you look at it from the players' perspective. And look, the Minnesota Wild, them scoring 6 goals, that's not necessarily indicative of how good they are. They're not a bad team. They were on a really bad streak of games before they fired their coach, Dean Evason, who, by
yeah.
the way, was coach of the Milwaukee Admirals before he went to the Wild to be their head coach. So, look, you have that history there between Nashville and Minnesota, and then obviously Craig Leopold as well. There's always those ties. And Bill Guerin gets his guy in John Hines and hires him. So, look, when you have a rookie basically score a hat trick on you, he had a career night, obviously, for a damn good reason. And then you look at even what their goaltender was doing. You know, Philip Gustafson, he was someone that was having a bad start to his season,
mm-hmm.
and he looked stellar against the Nashville Predators. And so when you aren't creating enough chance, and when you're not challenging as much as you probably should, that's the more troubling aspect to this loss. And so they're playing a Rangers team where Andrew Brunette said it yesterday morning, if they're not ready and they're not energized to play a really good team today, they're in trouble. And they have a big test because they're also flying tonight to Buffalo, and they're going to play the Sabres tomorrow afternoon, so or tomorrow evening. But look, back-to-back games are rough. It's the first time this season. He did not say who was starting today, so it'll be it's intriguing for me to see if they're going to go with Saros or Lankanen against the Rangers. And it was Saros last time, so we'll see. I don't know. Kevin broke his stick over the goalpost yesterday at practice, by the way, because he got frustrated. But that was just because he let in a silly goal. But look, it is what it is, and we'll see what they do.
So the one thing in this game, because there wasn't a lot of positives to take away
right.
from this matchup against the Minnesota Wild, not a lot of opportunities, but something that I did notice were there was at least 2 or 3 really good scoring chances
yep.
by Philip Tomasino.
Yep.
And he just simply did not capitalize on it. And
no.
I'm talking about one-on-one with the goaltender in one instance. Another one was a really good pass. I can't remember who it was from. It might have been from Parsonen.
I'll check my game notes.
I can't think. He passed it right across the crease, set him up on the other side of the goaltender. The goaltender had to come over and make a good play on it. But, you know, for me, a guy like Philip Tomasino, who's been a healthy scratch from the lineup more than once this year, and has kind of been that young guy that has been disappointing mm-hmm. to this team so far this year, he has got to put the puck in the net when he gets those kinds of opportunities,
right.
Nick. Flat out, there's no excuse.
Yes.
When you get multiple opportunities and you don't capitalize on at least one of them in a big game like this one against a divisional opponent,
mm-hmm.
man. That one's got to hurt. And the first one, I will add, you know, it was before the game got out of hand. That goal could have changed a little bit of momentum, and we're not talking about a huge five-goal win by the Minnesota Wild in John Hines' return to Bridgestone Arena. It might have been a little bit more competitive in this matchup.
Yeah, it certainly could have been. And to go back on your point, I was even telling our analyst Jay Moore for 102.5 The Game, I said, look, I think if anyone's benefited from playing seven defensemen, it's Philip Tomasino, because he's been mismatched playing with a few different guys. And so, and I think that that one play that you were talking about may have been Colton Sissons that passed it to him. I was thinking of, I know what play that you're talking about. He was right in front all by himself on the right side of the net, and he just let it rip, and Gustafson had enough time just to get there. But he hasn't scored since the Preds were in Winnipeg, by the way. So look, that's rough. And for Tomasino, he was scratched a lot to start the season. I think that they've been forced to their hand to play him. Now, they've enjoyed watching him play. I think that his energy level has picked up playing with guys like Cole Smith and Michael McCarron. I think that – I heard this in the locker room, by the way. McCarron and Smith call Tomasino their kid. So, so he's been playing with them, and he's been playing really well. And I'm
– So what does that make him, little sexy?
I don't know. Maybe – maybe so. He has the long lettuce, as the guys say. So, but look, I do find it intriguing that he's been in a slump right now. He did have an assist against the Penguins, and so I thought he played well against the Penguins, and that's why I told Jay, our analyst with Pete Weber, I thought he's been playing well with the 7D. So I'm not sure what to really make of it moving forward. Now, we'll see how the bottom six matches up against the Rangers' top six later, because they do have Jimmy Vesey. They have Nick Bonino Bones. You know, he was here in Nashville a few years ago. He just scored his first goal with the Rangers a few games ago. So I'm kind of curious to see how the Rangers approach this one against the Predators, because guys like Trinan and Sissons, those guys are good goal scorers as well at times. So we'll see how they decide to go up against this squad. And look, we already know how bad. Like, this is a game that the Predators want to wipe away. It's happened. It's over. Let's take on the Rangers.
Yep. Coming up next, we're going to talk about the Preds and what they did in the month of November, going on the losing streak on the road, coming back and going on that six-game winning streak on their home stand. What are we taking away from this team now? We're also going to kind of look into this matchup a little bit more today with the New York Rangers. That's all coming up here on Riddle and the Reporter, Junior Riddle, Nick Kieser on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Welcome back in to Riddle and the Reporter, talking Nashville Predators here. I know there is a little bit of bitterness when it's coming to this team after that 6-1 loss to the Minnesota Wild, but let's not forget that this team went on a six-game winning streak and was looking like they were starting to put it together. So all in all, Nick, you know, it's December 2nd. This is going to be their first game in December today. What's the state of this team right now? Where do you think the Nashville Predators are, number one, in the playoff mix, in the West? Not necessarily in the standings, but how they're looking, and where do you think this team can go?
Well, look, and Jared was going over to Money Puck, which I've just gone over to, but I think the message in the room has been really crystal clear as of late. I think it has been that the entire time, don't get me wrong, but I think what I've heard more of from the players is there's been a healthy mix of conversation, of adjustments, or what they like, what they don't like about playing on the ice. And so when you are any sort of pro athlete, when there is constant communication and when guys are thriving, that's when you play at your best and you're not frustrated with each other. You're frustrated with the results, obviously, which is why when they were on their losing streak, you know, they were expressing that we know we're aware that we are a much better team. And so while that is frustrating, they can be happy that, look, this team has a 33% chance, according to Money Puck, just to make the playoffs. And now, look, it's a little silly to even mention that, but then again, we've talked about the Titans. If they get this win on Sunday, maybe they could go to the playoffs, but I highly doubt that too. But look, it's really early. It was always talked about, you know, for weeks that, hey, if the Preds are in the playoff picture by Thanksgiving, it'll look really good. You know what? I don't really care. I mean, a stat is a stat. And the Preds, I think the more encouraging aspect to all of this is things are clicking, Junie. That's what's been the biggest constant theme for me, at least, watching this team.
And, you know, TD has an old saying that he likes to say.
Okay, what's the saying?
That stats are like bikinis. They show a lot, but they don't show everything.
That's good.
So, all in all, you know, I look at this Predators team, and I think that they're doing the right things, and I think they're adjusting to this new system with Andrew Brunette and company, and they're starting to kind of file into form. Now, again, it was a dud Thursday night. We got to throw that one away.
Right, right.
They're gonna play, obviously, a lot better than that, and they're not going to have many nights like that throughout the season. But what I've been hearing on our station when we have guys like Elliot Friedman and Greg Wyshynski on is that a lot of these underlying advanced statistics are showing that the Predators are getting a lot of good opportunities, a lot of good offensive production. It's just the goals aren't necessarily falling their way and getting into the net yet. So can you kind of maybe explain that into terms for some of our listeners that don't necessarily know what some of these advanced analytics of possessions and shots on goal and all these things the Predators are doing well and why it's not showing up on the score sheet?
Well, I think, and I'll pull this up for just as an example, and I'll go over to Nashville. But look, when you take a look at how the Predators have fared offensively, they've had a lot of scoring chances. This has been a team that overall in the NHL, I think that has shocked some organizations with the terms of, hey, they're playing a lot better than we thought that they would this year. So the one aspect maybe that that fans might feel is most evident is the goaltending has kind of struggled to start off the season. You don't need to see all the advanced analytics necessarily to see that the Predators have kind of struggled in that regard. But I think looking at what they've done during five-on-five play so far this season, I've been encouraged because they have 42 goals at 5-on-5 play so far this year. They have 42 goals again, so they're currently a plus one on 5-on-5 play. That could be better, so that goal differential could be a lot better, and we're seeing that the depth scoring, when it's not acting, they are going to struggle. That's what I've reiterated a couple different times, saying, hey, the Preds, if they don't have some key guys, you know, from the bottom whatever six they have, if they're not scoring, then look, that's just rough. And I think that when you look at, I mean, look, the scoring chances for so far this season at 5-on-5 plays, 447. I mean, that's just based on them playing in all of their games so far. I mean, it's very early into the season. So, but what I'm more encouraged by is the fact that Philip Forsberg just had a crazy November. You cannot disregard that one of your best forwards, that you're paying, by the way. People were frustrated with how he was scoring or how he wasn't really doing as much to maybe start off the season. Lots of assists. Okay, but now through the month of November until now, he has 11 goals and 8 assists for 19 points. And in the NHL, he was tied for the lead in goals and during that time frame. And no other Nashville Predator has scored more than 19 points since 1998, since the start of the franchise. So that's encouraging for me to see. To this point, yes. And just in the month of November. So Mikael Granlund was the other person that held that record of 19 points in 1 month, and then he significantly dropped off. But look, I think looking at the advanced analytics, you can look at it all day. Like you just said, I mean, they can be great to look at, but I think when you even look at, you know, like I said, the goaltending, UC Saros, the expected goals against are definitely not encouraging for him, and the game the other night does not help whatsoever. And when you take a look at the goals save above expected, Saros is not really around anywhere. He's not really in the positive aspect whatsoever. Kevin Lankinen has a .1. He's ahead of UC Saros because of the games played that he's had so far this season. Now, when you get down to UC Saros, he is 75. So there's been 76 goaltenders that have played this year. He's 75 in goals save above expected at a -8.
And that's normally a stat that he's leading the NHL. And
yeah.
I believe he was number one in the league
in
saves above expected last year.
Well above 30 last year.
Yeah. And so that has been a huge drop-off. But I feel like UC Saros has been playing as of late. So going into this matchup, we don't necessarily know if it's going to be Saros or Lankinen yet at this moment in time. But this matchup against the Rangers, really quickly, I mean, they got some guys. Chris Kreider, Mike Zibanejad, you know, Perinen, you know, Nick Bonino, like you mentioned earlier, a guy that's been around once or twice. You know, I look at defenseman Jacob True, but like they got a lot of guys.
Yep.
A lot of really good players on this Rangers team. And then I had brought up with Colin Stevenson earlier about Igor Shesterkin being one of the better goaltenders. How do the Predators, even though they've already beaten this team earlier in the season, how do they get a big win to kind of get back into the winning ways?
Well, I think the easiest way to do that is get physical. Have the same energy you had against the Wild as you were getting physical and pissed off. Bring that into today's game. Because when the Preds were physical, they were around the puck more often. And so if you can do that against this Rangers team who can move the puck very quickly, get off to that quick start. The Preds had a great start against them when they played up in New York, up in MSG, not that long ago. So I'm going to be encouraged by the start of the game, and can they keep that rhythm throughout the entire game? And if it's Jonathan Quick, make him move laterally. If you guys get on the power play, make him move laterally, because he's not going to be someone that can move as fast as your normal goaltender, although he looks like his prime self right now. So how can you give him his first regulation loss of the year if it is him? Colin said that there's a good chance that he does play this afternoon, so curious to see if he does. And another thing, too, the Rangers' defense is insane sometimes. Trouba is a physical specimen.
Oh, yeah, he is.
He is a ruthless captain.
He'll lay you out in the middle of the ice, yes, that's
he will.
For sure.
Yes, he will. If you're not paying any attention and you are looking over the middle of the ice and you make a suicide pass, that's on you, man. You cannot leave that up for Trouba to execute on. And I think that Erik Gustafsson has stepped up nicely while Adam Fox has been out. He did just come back, so I'm going to be interested to see how much their defense jump up on plays, because if they do that, the Preds could get in trouble. But also, too, if the Predators dress Spencer Stastny this afternoon, which, by the way, got recalled. He was only up in Milwaukee for 2 days, never played a game with Milwaukee, by the way. I walked by him when he was leaving Nashville the other day, and I just said, good luck, and then he's back here 2 days later. He didn't even play up in Milwaukee. So if he dresses – that's a smart idea because he's fast, he can skate. I think he's NHL ready in terms of those things, but we'll see what they do.
All in all, big game today for the Nashville Predators. They got the number one team in the NHL with the New York Rangers coming in to Bridgestone Arena. Puck drop again is at 3:30. Join Max Herz and company at 2:30 for the pregame show. Coming up in hour number two, we are going to pivot over things with the Tennessee Titans' big divisional game at Nissan Stadium tomorrow against the Indianapolis Colts. We're going to get into that. Also, a lot of news coming out of Vanderbilt Athletics with football players throwing their names in the transfer portal. We will also discuss that as well in hour number two of Riddle and the Reporter here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.